Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm here with Dr. Richard Tooley, and today we're going to talk about principles of family leadership through crisis. I'd like to say that no family would ever have to go through a crisis, but I can't. You know, we live on this planet. Every family will have crisis at different times in their family. So, principles of family leadership through crisis.
Yeah, and I suppose one of the first things we should start off with is to define exactly what we would consider a crisis. So maybe, you know, I'll ask you that question. What's a crisis?
I have seen young children get attacked by dogs, you know, get some dog bites, which was a crisis to them. They ended up with PTSD. And then I've seen families who lose a pet, and it's a crisis to the child. And parents often don't recognize the importance of helping that child work through that crisis. And then there's the crisis of losing a grandparent, an aunt, or uncle. There's the crisis of losing a sibling, or the crisis of divorce. So we could probably pick any one of those crises, and maybe we could do that the second half of the show. So the first half would be a general type of discussion, and then the second half we would pick some specific situations that I know the listeners have been dealing with, and I myself have dealt with some. So let's go that direction.
Yeah, so if you take a look at a crisis follows the normal pattern of pretty much everything. You're at a steady state, something traumatic happens in your life, and then you return back to a state that is not the same as where you were. So, and that leaves a person in a situation where they're feeling a loss. And we use different terms for those things, and we use terms for how we deal with it. You know, we like to throw out the word that there's grief. You know, we feel grief, or we feel bereavement, or we feel mourning. Maybe you could define some of those terms for us to help us understand where we're going with that.
Well, I'm here to share, too, that I have been going through some grief counseling personally after the loss of Kathy, and I have been taught in these counseling sessions that bereavement is defined as the state of having suffered loss, and that grief is the emotional reaction to that loss, and mourning is related to grief and often used interchangeably. But however, mourning refers not so much to the reaction to the loss, but the process by which a bereaved person integrates the loss into her or his ongoing life. And of course, all different things impact this. It can be the age you are, it can be your personality type, it can be other losses that you've had, because sometimes you might not have dealt with a previous loss, and then you had another loss put on top of it. Like I had the loss of my dad, and then just a few months later, I had the loss of my sister. So I worked through two losses because I hadn't really processed my dad's loss, because my sister was in such dire straits that every spare moment I was, you know, ministering to her. And so until she passed away, and I had the time then to deal with my loss. And an interesting tool for those who might be in the same place I have been was to create a timeline. And it was interesting. It just asked me to create a timeline of all my losses. And I actually went back all the way to 1991. And they, you know, they were saying, why would you go back there? But that had been a very traumatic experience, because not only did it involve my personal relationship, but it involved my sister, who now had passed away. And so the therapist was able to help me through some losses that I had had a long time ago that now all came back and all bunched together. And unfortunately, in this world, we're dealing with loss. It's bound to happen. We lose our youth. We lose our job. Loss in all its different forms.
Yeah, so when we look at this, what's interesting about it, maybe I'll ask this question first just to clarify. What is the difference between bereavement, say, or grief, or bereavement, I guess would be the one, and PTSD?
Well, post-traumatic stress syndrome is defined by the last word, syndrome, where you get stuck. You're stuck. And being stuck in that bereavement, you really need help. I mean, it begins to take a physical toll. You can have chest pains, you can suffer gastro issues, and you can have heart, you know, just different organs can be affected by this state of bereavement where you are stuck and you don't know how to get out of it. Because post-traumatic stress syndrome, we know soldiers suffer that, but our children can suffer it and we can suffer it. And we need some help. We need help. How do we get out of this bereavement? How do we get out of our mourning, our state of mourning? And we know that if you look at it from a biblical point of view, there was a designated time of mourning. Way back with the children of Israel, they recognized that, you know, after you have a loss, your body's doing a lot of things behind the scenes. And if you have too much at one time and you're not processing it or taking the time to work through that grief, then you can easily get into the syndrome stage of it.
Okay, so if it's not dealt with, it can build up. So for example, you go back to 1991 and you have layers then of this that have been on you, and it finds its culmination in the death of your sister and the death of your father, and all of this happening suddenly, but it has layers. So the scars of what happens in the past don't really easily go away. They're still with us, and they can impact how we deal with grief in the future, how we deal with things that affect us in the future. And it could throw us into a state of PTSD if we're not careful.
Right. So now applying this to principles of family leadership, this is where the most mature person of the family, and I'm here to tell you, it's not always the mother or the father. Sometimes it's a sibling, an older child that takes on a role of comforter, because loss really is just that. You had something to love, you had a pet to love, you had a grandparent to love, and now they're gone. And so you don't have that interaction. So you're here stuck with love that you can't give to anybody. And you can see in children an acting out, and sometimes in adults, you will see an acting out. And you might say, that's just stupid, that's ridiculous, straighten up, get with the show. I mean, that's a reaction that so many times we do. Toughen up, just buck it and get going, you know? But that's not always the right reaction. And as we're looking at principles of family leadership through crisis. It's really nice if our boundaries, and we've talked about this before, setting the structure of how our family is going to navigate, if before there ever was a crisis, that was discussed. As hard as it is to discuss that, we like to all think we're going to live forever and that all the people around us are going to live forever. But if we discussed prior to any crisis, how we are going to function during a crisis, who's going to communicate to our family and friends, and outside of our family and friends, who would be next in line to do that type of communication, and how are we going to get the food on the table and get the clothes washed and get the everyday things done when we're working so hard with our own grief in the background. I do not know how many times single fathers and single mothers, but I've had more single fathers who, when their wife passed away unexpectedly, they abdicated. I mean, they were still there in the house and they still went to work, but they didn't know how to put food on the table as far as having the family still gather around the table. And so the kids not only lost their mother, but then they lost their father. And I've seen this, I wish I could say I've never seen this, but I've seen it now multiple times where each little person, because they're so overcome with grief, go into their little silos, eat their food in their little bedrooms, and there's no interaction.
Yeah, and I think this has to do with the model of the family. You know, if for example, the family has relied on the father or the mother to be the central person to make the decisions, to make the things happen, you know, usually if that's been the case and that's been the model where other people aren't contributing and there's no cross contribution, then you run into a problem when that one person who is the keystone to the whole family goes away. Everybody is kind of at a loss as to how to pick up and go. So, you know, I think that this is part of when you're talking about developing family leadership, you've got to be able to get your family to understand that each person contributes because we really don't know how we're going to react when grief strikes.
Yeah. Well, we have to take a break right here, but when we come back, we're going to talk about some actual scenarios of loss in a family and how the principles of family leadership carried them through. We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and I come to you each week through the programs of Education Currents and Homeschool Companion, and I'm so blessed to be part of MRG Media Radio Ministry, and I'm giving you the opportunity to be part of it too. We can't stay on the air without your financial support, so take a moment right now during our fundraiser to call you with a gift of any size. As a token of my appreciation for your gift, I have a gift for you, so be sure you call. And my gifts consist of books from different guests that I've had on the show and different topics that I've done. And I also have some books that I've written that I've autographed for you. So be sure and call us 301-824-3162. That's 301-824-3162. Or write to MRG Media at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland 21783. That's P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland 21783. Welcome back. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and I'm here with Dr. Richard Tooley, and we are talking about principles of family leadership through crisis. I wish I could say that you might be immune from crisis. And in fact, I think that I lived most of my life feeling that by God's grace, my parents would never pass away, my siblings would never pass away, I would never pass away. But God hasn't come yet. Jesus is still, you know, he's just around the corner, but he's not here yet. So we have to figure out how to navigate through crisis. And we were looking at some principles that we can follow. So I'm going to give you a scenario, Dr. Tooley, and then you give us some good answers here. Okay, so I have a middle-aged couple whose son decided to work for Uber, and he went to pick up a call, and when he got there, they robbed him, and as he tried to run away, they shot him in the back 4 times. Now, they're devastated, of course. He hasn't passed away. He's still on life support. How do you navigate? How do any of the principles that you've talked about, family leadership, how does that carry them through? They have 2 younger children.
Okay, so if we're dealing with a family like that, they now, if they have not done any communicating with each other about how we're going to handle this kind of thing, how we're going to deal with it, one of the first things that has to be considered is those 2 younger children, because the loss to the 2 younger children are not going to be as evident as the loss to the parents, and the loss to the 2 younger children is magnified by the reaction of the parents. So if there was good communication among the family, you know, as to we're a team, everybody's contributing, we're all, you know, handling this, then I think one of the things that happens is, and not knowing how anyone's going to react, is that other people within the family are ready to pick up when one person can't because of something like this. You know, sometimes grief of a loss like this is debilitating to a person for a while before they can get up and keep on functioning. And if you don't have somebody picking up for you, then a lot of stuff gets left undone and the bereavement process is magnified. So when you have something like this, the parents, of course, are going to have to leave because they've got the younger children. But the younger children also would have a leadership role in being able to pick up and help wherever they could with the manual tasks that have to be done. You know, these still have to be done. I remember one story that was told of a man who lost his wife, and he was just devastated, and a neighbor came over, and all she did was polish his shoes. And that act of her polishing his shoes helped him cope with the loss of his wife. And what she did was very practical, because he needed his shoes polished for the funeral. So, you know, when you start thinking about these kinds of things, young children have the ability to pick up some of these things and keep going. Now, usually what happens when you have this kind of a grief, everybody reacts differently. Some people are absolutely devastated to the point of not being able to function. And that means that then, and we're talking among the adults now here, because you have to get there. That means that the other adult has to pick up. And the problem now rests in, if the one adult is not able to begin to cope, there comes a point where the other adult and the rest of the family needs to pressure that adult to find help, you know, to find some outside help to be able to get back on their feet and get going. And in some cases, sooner than later is better.
Yeah, I'm hoping that in sharing my own vulnerability, that people will recognize it's not a sign of weakness to get help. It is actually, you know, if you had a big cut in your arm, you would go and get someone to help you stitch it up. Or if you had appendicitis, you'd have someone help you take care of that appendicitis. There's just some things that you need help with, and having a loss is one of those things. You can only stuff it so long. You need help, and if your spouse isn't there to give that support, and of course, you know that Kathy and my dad were huge supports for me. My dad and I were prayer partners, and every night we prayed over the phone or through Skype. You know, he was just a huge support. And so I was thankful when my husband said, you know, honey, I think you would benefit from some grief counseling. And he arranged it for me, and it was such a huge blessing. I would highly recommend it to anyone who's going through one of these experiences. I know we're coming to the end of our show. It just goes by so fast when I talk to you. But I wanted to talk about those 80-some children that were left orphaned, slaughter or terrorist attack in Nevada, and what a foster family. You know, these children have all been put in, some of them have been put with relatives, but they are all displaced. And what words of encouragement would you give to those foster families that have taken these children in?
Well, that's a real tricky one. You know, I can only hope that these foster families are very, very discerning and actually have been given some training in grief counseling. Because one of the things that's definitely going to happen with a good bunch of these children is they're going to act out. Something like that happens. They got to act out because they have no other way of expressing what's going on inside of them. And, you know, a foster family cannot have the trust that a regular family has to start with. Trust is such an important part in being able to handle this kind of thing. So a foster family who has some of these type of children who find them acting out and don't know how to react really needs to rely on expert help to get those children into a place where they're able to talk out their grief, where they're able to work through the process of grieving and come back to some form of normalization, albeit different than they were in before. And the pity of it all is that these children have to go through two steps. So they're going to be put in these foster homes. And then at some point, either they're going to be adopted by somebody else or they'll end up with relatives. So they're in a two-stage process. And the second stage is going to be a grief process again, too. So their worlds are upside down until they get normalized somewhere. And if they have good foster parents can build some trust there and can be patient when this child is acting out. But at the same time, I think when you talk about boundaries, this is an important point where foster parents do have to be able to set up some boundaries, because one of the ways where these young people have to deal with grief is recognizing that there is a structure that they can rely on being there.
Yeah.
So I would say one thing for the foster families is they've got to be consistent with them. They've got to be patient with these children, recognizing that they're working through some pretty horrific times for them. And yet at the same time, they need to maintain boundaries and maintain some structure. And then get the kind of grief counseling those young people need to be able to allow them to continue to move on.
Well, Dr. Tully, we've come to the end of our show. We've been talking about principles of family leadership through crisis. And as always, we've only touched the corner of the iceberg, but we hope that our listeners will continue to learn. And with that, I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.